Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. This is our response to the State of the Union address by Donald J. Trump last night. But before getting into that, I just want to thank our sponsor, the CoCertified app. Go to nationalbugle.com, click on the CoCertified link. It will take you to thekosherquestion.com. There you can download the app. It's $2.99. It makes you cool. You have to have the app in order to be cool. If you don't have the app, you're just a square, right? You are L7. Look it up, L7. It's a line from the Woolly Bully song. But look it up, L7. You're L7 without this app. And, which is to say square. You're a square. So, also, go to republicbroadcasting.org. There's a donate button there. So, you can, whatever you have left from your milk money after having bought the $2.99 CoCertified app, you can send those quarters to RBN. We know you've got the quarters because Donald Trump has, or Melania Trump, actually we have Melania to thank for the anti-bullying initiative. And without those bullies stealing your lunch money, you have got some quarters and whatnot, some change to send to RBN. So do that. Well, the Donald Trump State of the Union. What's the State of the Union? Cucky? I don't know. The speech was bad. I'll save the characterization disaster. It wasn't a disaster. It would have been a disaster if he had been announcing a war against Iraq because of yellow cake uranium bought from Africa. And because of the axis of evil. It wasn't axis of evil tier. In fact, to the extent he was talking about war, he was saying he didn't use the exact phrase give peace a chance, but he was talking about peace, he was talking about diplomacy, talking about North Korea. That was, to me, that was the high point of the speech, was when he talked about North Korea. So there were some elements, but the overall theme of World War II and the Holocaust, really, is that what we need to be talking about now? I mean, come on. There's real stuff going on. I had heard that Stephen Miller was going to write the speech. Then afterwards, I heard, and I don't know, after the speech, I heard on whatever it was, CNN, that he had initially been presented with a speech which he thought was too conciliatory. I don't know. I doubt Steve Miller would have written a conciliatory speech. And then he tried to get it rewritten to make it somewhat more combative. But the World War II theme of the speech, because remember, he opened by referring to the Great Crusade announced 75 years ago by General Eisenhower. And then, of course, introducing the D-Day vets from World War II. And then the Dachau survivor, who was also surviving, who also survived the synagogue shooting in October. And it just so happened that one of these soldiers had liberated him back in 1945, and all of this, it just went on and on and on. And meanwhile, and of course, then there's, well, I tell you what, I was texting one of my friends throughout the speech, probably really, really annoying him, but that winds up being kind of a record of my thoughts. So let me get back here. So I start off, what's with this World War II stuff, right? That's a couple minutes later. Okay, so he introduces Buzz Aldrin. I noticed on Andrew Anglin's website, The Daily Stormer, he was fact-checking the speech and fact-checking the moon landing, said it was false. I hope people don't go that down that whole path that it was false. It's really, I would say fake and gay, but it's not even gay. It's just, come on, grow up. Why is it so incredible to believe that we sent people to the moon? You know, we do have satellites in space. Do you know how your GPS works? I mean, I just don't get it, but whatever. I guess a lot of people, this is something boomers have an advantage because, A, we sat by the TV sets. And yes, of course there was something going on in a studio. It was called animation. It was written at the bottom of the screen where they'd flash between the black and white TV images that were from, you know, some camera located somewhere in the capsule, and you're looking outside the capsule and you're not really seeing much of anything. You're looking down a staircase. And then they would show a scene being broadcast from a Hollywood studio from a vantage point outside of the capsule in nice color, because that was more fun to watch. You were getting an idea of, nobody would sit around watching just this image of, grainy black and white TV being shot from, you know, looking down a ladder towards the ground of the moon, but whatever. Okay, how about this? I mean, Nancy Pelosi, what was she looking at? Well, I mean, I was pretty sure all along she was looking at a text of the speech, but who does that? Who has ever looked at the text of the speech while the guy's sitting there reading the speech? Unless you know, it was a foreign dignitary and he's reading a speech, but he has such an accent that you can't understand him. I could understand that maybe. And she was being so obvious about it too. And they were printed on these big rigid cards, and some people were saying, what is she, ordering Chinese food from a restaurant? Looked like a menu. That was really bizarre. I don't know if she'll be called out for it. I mean, if Donald Trump, he gets called out for everything. Will Nancy Pelosi be called out for that? And then the whole clapping thing, which at one part of the speech where Donald Trump was calling for, you know, some sort of cooperation, and then she got in some kind of weird, I guess, what would you call it, passive-aggressive pose and clapped at him instead of with him. Very, very strange. Then, of course, you never get very far into a Donald Trump speech, even at his rallies, where he doesn't start bragging about his accomplishments in bringing jobs and income and wealth and good things to African Americans and Hispanic Americans and Asian Americans, and never, ever a word for whites. And whites were the people who put him in. We know that he was elected with, 60% or more of the white vote. He had very little of the minority vote. It was overwhelmingly the white vote, over 60%. I think it was, 50? I don't remember exactly, but he came in with on the back of the white vote and got in by the skin of his teeth. And yet he can't thank us. He can't mention us. Women, sure. So talking about all these new jobs he's creating and 58% going to women. Now, once upon a time, you could do the math and say, well, if 58% went to women, then only 42% went to men. But of course, now with all this transsexual non-binary stuff, who knows? Who knows how much actually went to men? That's pretty sad. So, okay, let's keep going. It was getting back to Nancy. You know, we knew, of course, that in a State of the Union, every a few times a minute, the president says something and everybody in his party is going to get up and clap. And sometimes, depending on what it is, people on the other side will have to get up and clap. And of course, Nancy wasn't standing up for very much, but she did stand up when he was talking about building up the military, increasing the military. That she stood up for. What else? So, of course, he didn't talk a whole lot about the wall. Talked about that maybe 30 seconds. A barrier, a physical barrier. Some people call it a wall or a wall. So he's even backing away from the word wall. And he specified that it would be not just simple concrete, but see-through steel. Did you hear that? It's see-through steel. Well, a wall that you see through is a fence, isn't it? So I don't know. So he's certainly backpedaling on it. The main thing, whatever he says in speeches at this point, is all irrelevant. What we need to see is he actually going to declare a state of emergency next week after this three-week period of government funding expires? Is he going to declare a state of emergency? Is he going to not declare a state of emergency, but just use alternative funding? Because there's all sorts of alternative funding out there. There's existing funds that haven't been spent that could be spent on the wall. Is he going to do any of that? We'll see. The speech, it's not, in a way, the speech is important in that it sets, it sets the boundaries for what can be talked about. It creates a narrative, or it moves a narrative. And, of course, in that sense, it was a big flop of a speech. Now, of course, Jared Kushner really does seem to be playing a very, very prominent role. And he had brought with him, a couple of inmates who had been let loose. Look, in a country with how many millions of people are in jail, there certainly are people who were in jail longer than they should have been for, say, marijuana use. Guess what? There are people who are in jail for a lot longer than they should be. In fact, who shouldn't be in jail in the first place because of defending somebody at Charlottesville, right? Because of defending a man being attacked by a thuggish young a hoodlum, okay? DeAndre Harris is a thug and a hoodlum, and brought a flashlight club to this rally at noontime in the middle of August, okay? So he wasn't bringing it. Well, when I say bringing it, he was wielding it. According to his own testimony, I believe he said that it was handed to him by somebody in a mask, an Antifa. But at any rate, he clubbed somebody over the head and then got pushed to the ground and kicked a couple of times to get him away from the man he had just attacked. And the defenders are in jail, and DeAndre Harris was rewarded. So, you know, really, it's this who we want to be honoring. We want to be honoring drug dealers who went to prison and then started a little prison ministry, started reading the Bible in prison, and we want to bring them out, and that's who we want to have sit next to first son-in-law Kushner. I mean, really, is that who we're going to be calling out and honoring is a couple of, drug dealers? If you want to say they shouldn't be in prison for 25 years, that's one thing. But to bring them there and honor them as if, as if out of everything that's going on in the United States, these are the people that you need to honor or apologize to. We don't know their whole stories, and we do know the story of Jacob Goodwin. Okay, so let's see. Right, so he promised us a wall, and all we're getting is prison reform. That, by the way, is more or less a line from a song by Sven on The Tedious Show. A good song. It will be featured in the upcoming Goyim's Choice Awards. It's up for a Whitey Award. All right. So at one point, I was thinking that he was going to talk about, well, that he might threaten a state of emergency. He didn't. Okay. So that's basically, I guess I'm looking at a lot of my other comments, and I can't recall what I was, something lifted straight from Tucker. He was using some of Tucker's talking points, and I can't remember about what. Well, all right. Oh, yeah, and of course, I thought what was really good was the declaration that he was going to be meeting with Kim Jong-un in Da Nang, Vietnam, on, the 26th and 27th of this month. That's good. Let's see if Pompeo and company and Bolton try to sabotage it. And, of course, they will be going along on the trip and trying to prevent him from, for instance, signing a peace treaty or making progress on signing a peace treaty. There should be a peace treaty signed. You know, really, what do we have to lose there? The American demands, the American positions on our negotiating position vis-a-vis North Korea has been, we're giving you a long, long list of ultimatums, demands, and you have to accept every one. And that's our negotiating position. Which is, you know, it's just a non-starter, and that's why we've had this intractable situation for so long. So that was the most positive thing. Then the other positive things were that he was talking in terms of peace, which, you know, I looked over, the camera angle would change from time to time, and when the camera angle was from Donald Trump's left, you could see that sitting in the front row to Donald Trump's right was Bobby Rush, the former Black Panther who is now representing Chicago in the House of Representatives. And they had that camera angle when Donald Trump was calling for bringing troops home from Syria and Afghanistan. And Bobby Rush sat there with a glare on his face and didn't clap. So there you go. I mean, you think, oh, we're getting all the... Well, my audience didn't think this, but some people think, oh, we're getting all of these, you know, these activists from the 1960s and of course, these activists from the 1960s, where are they now? I mean, they're for a renewed Cold War. They're for all of these Zionist wars. You know, what's happened? So, okay. We will be going off to the break in just a minute. One bit of news. Apparently, there has been a Ruth Bader Ginsburg sighting. She reportedly attended a concert, concert of her niece, who is singing songs about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So this was supposedly on Monday. It was reported by the Washington Post and the Huffington Post and CNN, so it must be true. But still, she did not attend the State of the Union last night, and I believe she didn't attend either of President Trump's previous addresses to Congress, and was drunk at one of Obama's. So we'll be right back. And we are back. Well, I want to address now the brouhaha over the, yesterday morning, David Duke on his Twitter account had used some graphics from Tulsi Gabbard's election, you know, her presidential election website, and used, he imported that to be his masthead for a day. I don't know if it's still there. And, of course, the graphic said Tulsi Gabbard 2020, and then Dr. Duke asked a question, you know, could she be the person who is going to finally put America first and not Israel first? And it certainly appeared like an endorsement. It wasn't intended as an endorsement per se, but of course, if you listen to the show with Mark Dankoff and I yesterday, we, you know, we had a pretty thorough discussion of Tulsi Gabbard and where we agree with her, where we find fault with her. And of course, you know, there's plenty of fault to be found with her. But when you look at the political landscape in Washington, D.C., to not find fault with anybody, wow, that's actually pretty rare. Tulsi Gabbard, you know, we got into this yesterday. One thing I didn't mention yesterday, because I hadn't actually noticed it as of yesterday, but in looking at her various pronouncements on policy, she's using the term that she's saying she will end the new Cold War with Russia. And I find this very interesting for two reasons. One is because I would like her to end the new Cold War with Russia. But the second is the phrase, the new Cold War, was coined by Stephen F. Cohen, and my listeners are familiar with me talking about him. It was coined by Stephen F. Cohen at least a dozen years ago. And he's been saying we've been in a new Cold War. Certainly in 2008, in I guess it was August 2008, there was some skirmishes between the army of the former Soviet Republic of Georgia and some breakaway regions, some regions that since the end of the Soviet Union never wanted to be part of Georgia. They are South Ossetia and Abkhazia. These are two areas that had autonomous status within the Republic of the Soviet Socialist Republic of Georgia back in the Soviet days. And when the Soviet Union broke up, they did not want to cast their fate with the Georgians and their initially the first president of Georgia was a guy named Mikhail Gamsakhordia. It was Gamsakhordia was his last name, and he was very nationalist. And they're not ethnic Georgians. They didn't want to be part of it. And so, long before Putin, ever since the breakup of the Soviet Union, these two regions, which nominally are part of Georgia, have been de facto parts of Russia. And that has been the situation since long before Putin. It wasn't anything he did, but there is the Jewish-backed John McCain-sponsored president of Georgia, Mikhail Saakashvili, he thought he was going to be able to roll in and take those territories for Georgia, and he was pushed back. Certainly since that time, 2008, there's been a Cold War. But I think Stephen F. Cohen started using the phrase maybe a year or two prior to that because of the bad relationship. And I don't think it's a coincidence that I don't think it's a coincidence that Tulsi Gabbard's using that phrase. I think she or somebody around her must be following or reading or influenced by Stephen F. Cohen. And that's an important thing. That's a good thing. But of course, Mark Dankoff and I, we talked about her, you know, her social policies, which initially she was a social conservative, but since entering national politics has certainly walked back, and she's pretty much on board with the Democratic progressive agenda, so which we find fault with. But in terms of having her as a Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, and the defense job is open now, and the Secretary of State job may actually well be open because there are rumors that Pompeo might want to run for Senate from Kansas and may leave the position. The shame is that David Duke can't even speak... he can't even speak supportively about somebody in national politics where he agrees with them on a policy that's important to that person without that person then being forced to renounce David Duke. And of course she wanted to, you know, she said something like, I will accept your support once you renounce racism. And I mean, if you want to talk about racism, there's no more bigger racism than the racism against white people today. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. This could be the this just in section of the show, this just in, Virginia political blackface scandal widens to attorney general. So just to fill you in, I mean, actually, there's more going on than just blackface, but you had the governor who won, what is his name, Ralph Northam, and it when he was in the middle of a lot of scrutiny over his explanation of the implications of a late-term abortion bill, as you all know, it was revealed that in his yearbook, there was a picture on his page of the yearbook, there's a picture of a person in a KKK hood and a person dressed in a blackface standing next to each other holding beers. And no context has yet to be given, to my knowledge, no context. Was it a Halloween party? Was it from a talent show? I still think, you know, I had originally said that maybe they had performed at a talent show singing Side by Side. Maybe that dates me a little bit too much. How about in view of Groundhog's Day earlier this week, maybe Sonny and Cher's I Got You Babe. That would be funny if they were, you know, you had two people dressed like that and they were singing I Got You Babe to each other. I think it would be funny. Well, then, of course, it's been expanded because the Virginia Attorney General, who is second in line to become, should Ralph Northrop or Northam, should he resign and the lieutenant governor not be able to fill the seat, then the next in line would be one Attorney General Mark Herring. Well, Mark Herring has now said that he realizes he showed poor judgment and caused pain to others by dressing as a rapper, donning a wig and brown makeup to perform a song with similarly attired friends. Okay, so I wonder, did he really cause pain? I don't know anything about how old he is, when this would have happened, but maybe if I scan down the article. So those two have their blackface issue. The lieutenant governor, of course, he is in blackface every day because he's black. So I think that's certainly excusable. But on the other hand, there are allegations that at the 2004 Democratic Convention, which I think was held in San Francisco, that he had forced himself on a woman who is now a professor. And I thought all professors from California, especially if they're Democrats, need to be believed. She says he forced himself on her, and he's saying, no, it was consensual. Well, okay, there you go. So this just in. And this article that I'm looking at, which is from Reuters, it says the origins of blackface date to 19th century minstrel shows in which white performers covered themselves in black grease paint to caricature slaves. And there was something like that. I remember the first time I was exposed to blackface, it was probably some Saturday, and I was home from school. Maybe I was in first or second, third grade, something like that. My brother would watch old movies on TV, because Saturday, there was a lot of time to fill up. So Saturday afternoons, if you watched the local TV stations, they'd often have the movie of the week or something like that. So there was movies on, old movies, Shirley Temple movies and whatnot. And I don't remember which movie it was, but they did show minstrel singers in blackface. And I asked my mother, I said, why did they do that? Why did they put that stuff on their face? And she tried to explain it to me. And I said, well, I would watch them even if they didn't have, like, I didn't get it. They could be singing that songs without the makeup on their face, and they would still be singing songs. It would still be fun. I didn't get it, but whatever. And if you look at Al Jolson, or who was the other guy, Al Jolson? I can't remember. But these people who became well known as minstrel singers, they were singing and dancing quite well. I don't know if that was really that offensive. It was a thing that they did back then. Now, if you were to go to minstrel shows, actual minstrel shows, what do they do between the songs? Well, maybe they have dialogue, and maybe the dialogue made the people in blackface out to be fools. Okay, well, of course, Hollywood does that all the time nowadays to country people, and and Madison Avenue does that all the time to white people in TV commercials. I mean, look at TV commercials and look how stupid they are. And so it's still going on today. I complain about it. So if black people want to complain about the minstrel shows, well, okay, whatever, fine. But like I said, the Al Jolson or whoever else it was that was well known for this, they really, maybe they did sometimes, but for the most part, I mean, if you look at Mammy, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Mammy, it really wasn't making the, it wasn't characterizing the blacks in a bad way. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of overreaction to it. And then when you talk about Northam, say, he says, well, maybe he put on some blackface, or not that blackface, but some shoe polish for some bizarre reason when he did Michael Jackson, whom, by the way, Michael Jackson spent like the last 20, what was it, 25 years of his career in whiteface? Really? And nobody complained about it other than it just looked kind of creepy, but nobody was offended by it. Maybe a little nauseated. I'm going to say I'm a Michael Jackson fan overall, overall I am. I mean, some of the crotch grabbing I didn't particularly appreciate, but I thought he was a good dancer and a good singer. And he did sing have that song, "They Don't Really Care About Us," "Jew Me, Screw Me," and then some other words that I won't repeat because we don't re say words like that on National Bugle Radio or on RBN. But Michael Jackson did have a word that I can't repeat, referring to Jews, in one of the songs. And it was in a line that started with "kick me." You can figure out maybe what the next couple of words were. So I have a certain appreciation for Michael Jackson. He did do, let's see, he died, when did he die? Was that about 6 years ago or so? And I think if you do the math, he spent probably 25 years, the last 25 years at least of his career, basically in whiteface. And I'm not offended by it. Eddie Murphy, he did a very funny Saturday Night Live skit back in the 80s in whiteface, and I'm not offended by it. And there were, I forgot their names, but there were a couple of black, they were brothers to each other, and they were the brother of the director, and I can't remember their names, but they did a film called White Chicks, where they were in whiteface, not just whiteface, but in drag, the whole movie. And I didn't see the movie, so I can't really comment on it, whether I'm offended by it or not, but whatever. So it goes on. And if somebody is imitating Michael Jackson, especially if they're a fan of Michael Jackson and they're imitating him and they put on the glove and they is trying to modify your skin tone, is that really, I mean, you would put on a wig. Putting on a wig isn't offensive, and the wig might change the pigmentation of your hair. Putting on a glove, putting on a jacket with, the military epaulettes or whatever they're called, that's not considered offensive. To modify your appearance in one way or another to look like somebody that you're portraying, especially when you're portraying them as a fan. Why is that even offensive? And okay, so what? Minstrel people put on blackface. Minstrel people also, wore gloves, or they wore shoes, or they wore hats. Does that make wearing hats racist and offensive? So really, it's gone so far. And of course, the funny thing is that the whole reason, I'm saying it's going so far, and the whole reason it's going so far on Northrop and or Northam and these others, is because Northam was explaining in accurate terms the implications of a late-term abortion bill, which had garnered a lot of attention because it had gone too far. So they are going too far. And tying this into the beginning of the show, we're probably going to have 6 years of Donald Trump floundering about. 6 more years. I think he's going to get reelected. Why? Because the Democrats are going so far. It's probably not going to be Tulsi Gabbard, who at least has a sensible foreign policy. It probably won't be her. It will probably be Kamala Harris or someone else who will be going too far, and people, enough voters will be attracted to the relative sanity of Donald Trump, the relative sanity and decorum of Donald Trump, and he'll probably remain in office and may well be as ineffective in his second term as he has been in the first half of his first term. Buckle your seat belts. Getting back to the whole Virginia thing, this is a phenomenon that has been come to be known in alt-right circles as smiting the normie. So what's happening is more or less random people, well, these people aren't exactly random, but the idea of smiting the normie is more or less random people being harshly penalized for doing basically normal things. And so if 35 years ago, while the governor or the attorney general were in college and they're in some sort of contest or at some sort of party, and in the case of the governor, he was a fan of Michael Jackson. The case of the attorney general, I just saw a picture of him on AP in an AP article, and he's a white guy and he's middle-aged and he's got white hair, and so he was in college in the 1980s, probably late 50s or something. And was he a fan of rap music then? I mean, rap music was coming on, and it wasn't as reprehensible then as it is now. The first time I heard rap music was with Curtis Blow, and he was talking about Ronald Reagan's presidency, and it wasn't that offensive. I guess it became a lot more offensive as it was mainstreamed. So I don't know. I don't know the context, but anyway, it's smiting the normie. What was done then wasn't at all, out of step with norms back then. And suddenly, 35 years after the fact, people are supposed to grovel about this. I mentioned earlier in the program Bobby Rush, the Black Panther, who, as a Black Panther in 1969, and the founder of his chapter of I guess the founder of the Illinois Black Panthers, he was one of the co-founders, had called for violence. He said, "We support violence." What was it? To overthrow the establishment, and he called for violence, and I don't see him having to grovel the same way. So they're smiting the normie. In a way, you could say the same thing's happening to Tulsi Gabbard. She had been against gay marriage early in her career, at a time when, well, it was a thing. There was no gay marriage anywhere, and her father, who I guess had traditional beliefs, was a campaigner against gay marriage in Hawaii, which wound up being one of the very first states to have it. And now she's having to apologize profusely for it. But of course, she had actively campaigned against it. But others, you know, Joe Biden is having to apologize for supporting the Clinton administration era sentencing guidelines that had harsh guidelines for drug kingpins and drug dealers and whatnot. And people are having to, anybody who's at all older is having to, and has any background in politics going back more than a few years, now has to apologize for and try to walk back their lack of supporting gay marriage 15 years ago, or transsexual bathrooms, or whatever it is. If they didn't support that 5 years ago, then, you know, they're bad and evil. Even Kamala Harris was deemed too diligent in her former post as Attorney General of California, or a prosecutor in Alameda County, which is Oakland, California, because she put people in prison. And, of course, that's all racist. You can't put people in prison. And so it's amazing that it's not just the level of PC. I mean, the political correctness is reaching levels previously thought impossible. Not just that, though, but that the new PC codes are being applied retroactively at least 35 years. And this is what's happening. So, well, we will be going off to break again. We'll be right back with more exciting news and commentary. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Okay, so in our closing minutes, a couple more points from the State of the Union. Two of the worst points were when he talked about Venezuela, and he talked about the legitimate president of Venezuela was some young guy that most Venezuelans have never heard of, who had only recently been elected as a speaker of the National Assembly, and who has declared himself president. Apparently, Venezuela does not have impeachment in its constitution anymore. The way you remove a president from office is not through impeachment in the National Assembly, but it's through a recall referendum, and enough signatures have to be collected. And there was a referendum against Cesar Chavez, which he survived, but it was put on the ballot, and there was a vote on him. Now, may it be that because of intimidation or corruption that they would have trouble getting signatures put on the ballot? Well, you can make that case, but I think, on the other hand, here's some guy declaring himself president, and he hasn't even been arrested. So, really, how much of a jackboot is on the necks of these people if they can declare themselves president, if they can have rallies and whatnot outside? So I don't know. But Trump has actually always been awful on Venezuela. And you might wonder, well, why Venezuela? Of course, Venezuela does have big oil reserves. And, you know, that's part of it. Oil has always been overemphasized in the people talking about foreign policy. It's not that it's not a factor at all, but there's a tendency to emphasize oil because then you don't have to discuss Zionism. You don't have to discuss Israel, and especially in the Middle East. But, you know, oil has something to do with it. And Venezuela, for a while, was America's, like back in the 15 years ago or so, at the time of the Iraq invasion. Where were we getting most of our foreign oil from? We were getting it from Venezuela. But, you know, there's plenty of oil out there. And the United States, because of all the fracking and everything, which is problematic, but that's for another episode. The United States really doesn't need a whole bunch of oil. There's a lot going on with regards to Venezuela. And part of it is because Venezuela has closer relations with Russia and Iran, and then Iran, of course, that was the other thing. And Trump's always been awful on Iran. Those have been like the two worst parts of his foreign policy, other than, you know, moving the American embassy to Jerusalem and whatnot. But that's more symbolic. But the threats against Iran, that's been bad. Of course, he hasn't made any moves against Iran, and at times has seemed to hold out the prospect that you could have negotiations with Iran. And I think, you know, he can't do North Korea and Iran at the same time. And that's one of the reasons I think North Korea is important. He's got to get North Korea under his belt as a success of negotiations. And I think by improving relations with North Korea, establishing formal diplomatic relations and a peace treaty, and of course, then North Korea and South Korea, I don't expect any rapid unification like East and West Germany, but they could start really cooperating a lot more. It would be a good thing for everybody involved, and it would then serve as a template and an example that Trump could use to move on to Iran. And not that I want to have the brinksmanship with Iran, but okay. Well, that wraps up this show. Stay tuned, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio and the Whitey Awards coming up later this week. We'll be right back.
Thank you.